Hello and welcome to Power the Parent, the podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Speak. I'm a level 7 CMI accredited coach, a StrengthsScope master practitioner, mental health first aider, and talent consultant. And I'm also the face behind Power of the Parent. In this podcast, I'll be speaking to parents in the workplace. Some of them are in traditionally employed roles, others are running their own businesses, and we're having conversations about life in general, insights about being a parent and having a career, and exploring the strengths that parenting has awoken for people. We will talk about things like the value that they're bringing to the workplace, as well as my guests very generously sharing their personal stories and anecdotes about everything life can throw at us. Welcome to this bonus episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. I am so excited to tell you that I am joined today by the amazing Lucy Critchley of Lucy Critchley VA fame. Lucy, after an illustrious career in TV and broadcasting, set up by herself, but has had some incredible growth over the last year. She has established her VA business and has a growing team. And I am very grateful to be able to work with Lucy. She is the absolute brains behind Power of the Parent, the podcast. And I was chatting with Lucy about guests, and I had this light bulb moment where I thought, we need to hear from the person that's helped me make this happen. Something that I had faffed over for such a long time, but Lucy's incredible style and way of being with her clients finally actually got me to do the podcast. And I would love to share this platform with her and for you to all be able to meet her and get to know her a little bit better. So thank you for joining me, Lucy.
Thank you. That's so nice.
So we're chatting on Zoom, and we've actually never met in person, although we've done lots of work together over this last year, although we are meeting up soon, I think, aren't we?
Yeah.
So you made that transition from employed life into self-employed, the VA world, which seems to have grown a lot over the last year. Tell us a bit about how it's been for you.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a nuts thing, really. I mean, I was always kind of, when I worked in TV and audio, I was freelance, but I was sort of like in that funny area of freelance where I had decent length contracts. Mm. So I was bouncing around from contract to contract, really, but and they would be like sort of the very minimum of a couple of weeks, but then they would go up to like a year somewhere. So I was kind of, and usually I would stay in the same place for a couple of years, but change onto different productions and things. And then had my daughter, and I realized that quite quickly, to be honest, that I didn't really want to go back to working in TV and audio production, but mostly because the other parents that I knew that already worked in that industry were exhausted and were, you know, amazing at their jobs, but they would end up working longer hours but in less time. So, you know, if they were contracted like 3 days a week, they might still end up working on a fourth or fifth day, answering calls and emails and stuff, and then not being financially rewarded for the fact that they're giving up that time that, you know. But so that kind of spurred me on. And then the sort of work that I was doing as a production coordinator, I think, lended itself really nicely to the VA world. And it's something that I'd considered for such a long time. I remember being in the car with my husband, and I was having a bit of a wobble about what I wanted to do next. Contract was ending. Like, do I want to stay on? Do I want to look for something else? And I said, oh, I've seen this job online. And actually it was Holly Curry, who we both know. And I was like, this sounds amazing. Do you think I could do that? And then he was like, duh. And then it just sort of, it was like one of those things that sort of went to the back of my mind. And I sort of didn't have the guts to do it, you know, sort of as quickly as the thought had come into my head. And then when COVID happened, as horrible as it's been in the sense of not being able to see friends and family and having a newborn and, you know, not being able to go out and like show her off and things, and obviously all the other worldwide sadness that it's involved, you know, it sort of gave me that like, well, if I don't do it now, when am I actually ever going to do it? And then it just sort of went from there, really. And it really took off in a way that I hadn't thought that it would. And I've just met so many like brilliant, nice people who are like interesting and interested, and It's just, I just wish I'd done it sooner, really.
What do you think did eventually push you to doing it? Because that phrase, I wish I'd done it sooner, if I had a pound for every time, no, a penny, if I had a penny for every time I'd said that, or I worked with clients that had said that, or have friends or family, I probably wouldn't need to work. I mean, there is an abundance of things, aren't there, that hold us back, and some of them will be incredibly personal. But what are some of the things that, like, what finally gave you that push to do it?
I'm sure you know all about this, but the sort of maternity pay for a freelancer is peanuts. And
light word to use for it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And so what I was doing when I was working was working at a production company and then freelancing somewhere else at the same time whilst pregnant, and I was exhausted, but I had to do it because I needed to have some kind of savings pot. I mean, we kind of like to keep things nice and fair in our house, and I hate the thought of like not being able to like do my bit. So I wanted to make sure I had a nice bank of money. And then I had Edie 4 weeks early, and like I said, COVID hit, and I just went a bit like, I don't know what the word is, but I just had this moment of like, I need to do something else. And I needed that like sort of external, like that external thing that was like, this is my thing to do, because I couldn't take her anywhere. We've been to the park a lot and I just needed that brain space for me to give me something to work on that wasn't being a mum. She was only 5 months old when I launched my business. A sort of a combination of the factors around maternity allowance being rubbish, and also like needing to like exercise that side of my brain that I didn't want to sort of get to a point where I was like, oh, like, what do I want to do? And then, you know, I think I am a special case though, because I don't know many other people who would want to launch a business when they've got a 5-month-old. But I did it, and I feel like if I was talking to anybody else, I'd be like, what are you doing that for? Like, enjoy your time. But I think having literally nothing else going on, apart from having a baby, it sort of led me to like, oh, now is the chance, if that makes sense. And my husband was like, because he works in sports broadcasting, so a lot of his work had just stopped. So we had the time to be able to do it, and it meant that, as a lot of dads don't get, it meant he got a lot of time with Edie. And so we just kind of managed it between us, and I just did it.
I mean, you've made that sound like so simple, which I suppose in a way, although the logistics of it and the fact that you have had Edie very much in the background, this has been one of those classic build it while she naps type businesses.
100%.
I'm sure it hasn't, it's had its ups and downs, but at the heart of it, it's a very simple message, isn't it? I think, and I don't want to kind of fill your mouth with words, but you figured out what you would be great at and what that therefore looks like as a career. How do you actually get somebody to pay you for the stuff that you're going to be great at, and what does that mean as a business? And then you've established that business, and well, like I said at the beginning, it's grown so much for you over the last year. And I know that as well as Jack being your husband, he's also doing some stuff behind the scenes at Lucy Critchley VA, isn't he? And that's I suppose the heart of it, isn't it? It's about figuring out what works for you as a family. And you know, fully appreciate that it doesn't always happen like that for lots of people, but if you're in a situation where you need to, and I think what is actually refreshing about this conversation is that you're not talking to somebody, I don't mean this to diminish anybody else's story, but from a financial perspective, this was born out of, no, I need to earn money as well, and it needs to work. So I suppose you've got a few different vested interests there to make sure actually you've got bills to pay, a tiny mouth to feed, and something that works for you, both for you and Jack.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the nap time thing, like my first lot of like quote brand photography was taken in our living room when Edie napped. Like I had three outfits and my makeup bag, and I was just like, you know, sitting at the table fake reading a book or whatever. But he had to take those pictures. You know, there was no other way around it. I felt like I just had to do it and it had to happen. And I'm a bit like that when I get something in my head. I'm like, right, we're doing it now. And maybe that's why it works. But Jack works with me now and he's part of the team, which is really exciting. In fact, he's editing a podcast for a client as we're recording this, which which is nice. And also, you know, with the financial thing, the way I grew up, if I'm really honest, was that money was quite tight. And I've always sort of had that mindset of like needing to do my own thing and pave my own way and pay my own way. The thought of like not really working or not having that money in the bank, even though I did have savings and stuff, I was just like, oh, I don't like this, because of how it was when I was a kid. You know, we had to really work hard. Ever since I was old enough to have a job, I had a job. When you're sort of career orientated and then you have to stop, well, for me anyway, I was kind of like, oh, now what do I do? That's kind of one of the things that kept me going, I think.
And I didn't realise that Edie had been 4 weeks early. Were you still kind of doing the two freelance jobs at that point?
I had preeclampsia. So, yeah, so just to add it all on. But I had preeclampsia and I finished working about 3 or 4 weeks before she arrived. So she was originally due on like the 9th of January. But she came on the 12th of December, which is the day before my birthday, which is lovely. But it was one of those things where I'd have to go into hospital, say, 2 or 3 times a week to be monitored and stuff. I'd have loads of blood pressure medication that I had to take. I had like 1 or 2 kind of overnight stays. And I think actually in terms of talking to other people who have had preeclampsia, they've been in hospital for weeks and weeks and weeks. But luckily for me, it wasn't the case. So I think it must have been like the 10th or the 11th of December, they asked me to stay in. And I was a bit like, oh, don't really want to. And it was the day before the election. So I was like, well, I'll stay, but I need to go home and vote. But I never got to, because the next morning they said, oh, you're going to have your baby today. So it was kind of as quick as that, really. We didn't have anything ready, like her room wasn't ready. We didn't have many clothes for her because she was so small. She was like £4.14.
Oh, and my goodness.
I mean, to me, she felt massive because she's like my kid, right? But even now, people like look at them like, oh, isn't she tiny? But I just think like, this is my like massive kid now. Like, that's just kind of how it is, you know? I think we just kind of took it in our stride and got on with it, because that's what we had to do.
Are you and Jack the calmest people ever?
I don't know, maybe. I think we're very methodical. And I say I think I'm very methodical and I sort of trusted the process, I think. Mm-hmm. And often like my mind will kind of get ahead of me and I'll be like, what if this happens and what if this happens and rah, rah, rah. But I don't know what it was, but when I was pregnant, it was just like, it's gonna be fine, it's got to be fine, it has to be fine. And that's just what I kept telling myself, and you know, touch wood, so far everything's been that way. But yeah, it was a bit of a nuts start to her life. And then I think I finished work probably, yeah, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks before she landed.
Oh my goodness. That's a decent turnaround, particularly like right at the end where you kind of there and then all of a sudden, no, she's coming today.
Yeah, yeah. Then doctor was on her rounds and said, oh, your baby's coming out. It's just as matter of fact as that, and then we just had to go with it. So
I mean,
out she popped.
You can't you've definitely given the shortened version of a story that out she popped. I'm pretty sure that isn't quite how
it wasn't quite as quick, but it had a cesarean, because as well as all that stuff, she was breech.
Oh, God.
So it was
He was making you work for this arrival, wasn't she?
No, wasn't she just? But it was really funny because we were, I mean, this is another part of the story. We were booked in to do everything at LGI, had like the tour of all the birthing suites and did all the stuff. And then that morning when the doctor said, your baby's coming today, we needed to be on transitional care because she was early and small. So then they said, oh, but we don't have any beds here, so you have to go to Jimmy's, which is the other side of Leeds. Mm-hmm. And we were sort of like, well, okay, right, I don't really want to, but okay. And I said, oh, well, we'll just drive over because like Jack had arrived to visit. And they said, oh, no, you need to come in an ambulance. And I was like, oh, I don't need to do that. I'm fine. I had to go on a stretcher. It was too much, really. I felt so embarrassed, isn't the word, but I just felt like I was, I don't know, like they were taking the mick. Like I didn't need to be, you know, in the little bed thing that they took me in. But we got there and I got all set up with a cesarean and I just felt this like movement here sort of underneath my ribs, and it was her moving and putting her head down. So she was a sasspot from day one, but when they did the cesarean, like her head was engaged and she was like ready, but she wasn't like half an hour before that. It's like she knew, isn't it? I just still can't get my head around it.
Wow. I mean, yeah, the timing of that as well. Wow. So you have throughout this conversation kind of talked about different strengths and things that you bring. How much of that was there before you had Edie, and how much of it do you think has been kind of made even more for you since you've become a parent?
I think some of it was there because of work and having to be so organised, because I would send crews out across the country, across the world. I'd have to organise flights and vaccinations and visas and all this kind of stuff for people to go. I mean, we sent people to Kenya. I've sent people across to like Azerbaijan and like all over the world. And there's an element of organisation that comes with that, that I think you have to have a certain type of brain to do, because some people just don't have that. And I think it's a good thing if you are that way, because obviously because that's how I am. But I think since having Edie, that's kind of like doubled up almost, because there's so much to think about, isn't there, when you've got kids, and it's like nap times and schedules, and especially at the beginning, you know, like bottles and like what we're going to do this afternoon and, you know, all that sort of stuff. It really like gets your brain thinking like, well, I need to have a plan, because, you know, when you're sat in for the afternoon and your kid just wants to go out, you know, there's, you need to have something in mind, don't you? Like, let's go and do this. And I think it's taught me a lot about like being resilient and getting by on very little sleep sometimes. And just, you know, I think also though, your heart just opens up, doesn't it? And I think I've always been quite empathetic and understanding, and I really pride myself on like knowing people, if that makes sense. And I feel since having Edie, that's just kind of, because now I can understand what it's like when people have got kids and when they don't, and you know how certain things would make you feel, because that's how we felt or how I felt. And I think it's just been really nice actually to sort of consider just what a difference like she's made to our lives, really.
Well, I'm sure she'll listen back on this one day and be like, ah, you're welcome, Mum.
She'd be like, shut up.
I would be really interested to hear, I know it's hard to kind of distill down, but what's been the best thing about setting up your VA business?
Oh gosh, I mean, I think it's just been meeting people, you know. I've met so many brilliant people since sort of setting my business up, through social media, through like some networking bits and bobs that I've done. And it's just been really nice because people get what you're doing. And if they don't, they're really willing to like listen and be like, oh, maybe I need some of that. Which is just, it's been a real like, oh, this is the thing. I did a while ago, I did a course that was about finding your thing. And it just kind of like, it really cemented that this was what I should be focusing on. And it really made me think about the fact that now I am doing it, it sort of feels like it's proven its point, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, definitely does. On the opposite side of that, what has been, because, you know, I'm all about managing the imbalance. What's been the hardest thing, if you could pick one?
Well, I mean, there is obviously those moments where you have to pick what your priority is going to be in that moment. Is it going to be a trip to the park, or is it going to be writing a newsletter for somebody, you know, and working out actually when, if you decide to do the fun thing rather than the work thing, when actually can you fit it in? And that kind of juggle, because often, like at the moment, Edie goes to nursery and we split the days that she's not at nursery between us, so the other person gets a chance to work. It's lovely because it means that we get like a day each with her and we get to do really fun stuff. But then there are some times where you think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to go and do things as a family? Then in that case, one of us might decide that we're going to do something slightly different that day. But it can be tough to figure out how to balance it when, like, maybe your heart is like, oh, I really want to go to that, to the farm. But then some days you're like, actually, no, I need to stay.
I've tapped out.
yeah. And, it, you know, having the house to yourself when it, there's no one else in it is a dream, isn't it? So I think it is just working out what is your priority in that moment and then having that conversation with yourself of like, okay, well, if this is what I'm going to do, I need to make sure I can go and do the other thing later, or how do I work it out with my time? Because, you know, I suppose the reason I set this up is to have that flexible lifestyle, because working in TV and audio, you don't get it. So, or at least I didn't get it. And I want to kind of make sure that I'm actually embodying the reason that I set my business up in the first place, you know, to have that flexible nature to it. So I think sometimes it's sticking to those boundaries that I've set myself as well. But that can be tricky. But it's all part of it, I think.
It seems to me to be one of the biggest topics for people who end up working for themselves, which I think sometimes can be hailed as a bit of a catch-all, and that's what you're meant to do after you've started a family. But some of the biggest challenges come around the whole time side of things, and actually the amount of times that you do end up working when other people aren't, and that might mean evenings, it might mean weekends, or during the week if you're, you know, whatever your family setup is. And it's so different and unique for each of us. And I think it's sometimes a bit of that hustle culture, isn't it? We are led to believe that we can earn six figures overnight after having been set up for a week, all that kind of jazz, I'm gonna say. I'm sure that is somebody's truth, and I'm sure that does happen. But it certainly isn't the majority, I don't think. And I think it often does come down to that boundary conversation, which, you know, I love talking about boundaries, not because I'm a perfectionist at them, or that I've got mine sorted all the time. I definitely haven't, but they are so important for your own kind of mental well-being, but also to protect the relationships that you've got around you as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like you say, some people just want to be out there and earning all the money that they can, and well, that's brilliant. I feel like there's a lot of stuff on social media around like, oh, I had a 10k month and I did this and I did that, but that doesn't include the money that you spent to get that 10k month. And it just often to me feels very cult like and makes me feel quite uncomfortable, because I think some people would see that and think, oh, well, if I just buy this course, then I'm going to be, you know, earning over 100 grand this year. And while, you know, maybe that could be a possibility, it's not necessarily going to be like, oh, now I've got this course, I'm a millionaire. You know, that's not how it works, is it? So I think for me, the best thing about having this business is that I can make it work for how I want it to. But that isn't to say that sometimes the boundaries that I sort of have in mind or have in place don't slip, because I think, you know, I've got to get this job done, or, oh, I'll just do this while Edie's in the bath, or I'll do this while Jack's doing bedtime or something. And then actually, like, that could have been my time to just like chill out for a bit, or to start making dinner, or, you know, do some nice things. And I think it's tricky, isn't it? Because you want to get the work done, and you want to do a really good job, and you want people to be happy with the work that you're doing. But then also you have to consider the impact that it has on like you and your well-being.
Definitely. I've just had a week off for half term, and I deleted my, well, you know that I did this, I deleted my email app, and I was all kind of ready, raring to put it back on this morning, and I haven't, and I'm not going to.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I feel a little, I think that I will stick to it. I do think that I will, because it was, I hadn't realised, but I think I was addicted to my email, to checking my email, more so than social media. I heard somebody else say that either on a podcast or on a post or something. I can't remember who it was. I really need to figure out who it was, because I need to thank them. Whoever said it, when they said it, I was like, oh my God, so am I. I can very easily back away from Instagram, or just pop in like once a day for 10 minutes or something. Hasn't always been the case, but at the moment I'm okay with, like, I don't do the pointless scroll. But email was a totally different kettle of fish, and it definitely stemmed from the business side of things, that I don't want to miss an email. What if somebody needs me? What if an amazing piece of work comes in and I'm not able to respond? But actually, having not looked at it for a week, I did have a look on Friday, but that was for one specific thing, and I didn't look on my phone. It was because I was setting up recording a podcast with somebody, and so that was my laptop, and I was in and out, didn't look at anything else. And it didn't feel tempting to look, but I think it was the biggest light bulb for me was the realization about how bad, and I do use that word bad very intentionally, that it was just a total distraction.
That's fascinating, isn't it? I have some clients who say, like, I check my emails between like 9 and 9:30 on the days that I'm working, and that's it until the next day or whatever. So if you need an urgent reply, just give me a ring or whatever. But I just think, well, I've sent my reply, and for me it's never that urgent, you know. I never think about kind of, I don't know, messaging somebody at like 4 o'clock when I'm, you know, when I'm working or something, and say like, by the way, I need this from you, because it can wait, you know. If I need it, I can hang on till they're working the next morning, sort of thing. And I think if that's a boundary that you want to put in place, then why not? You know, like you put on your email footers about working flexibly, like, you don't expect an instant reply from somebody. And I think often, maybe this is from working in sort of more corporate, you know, TV and audio environments, often if you did email somebody at 8 o'clock at night because you were just doing that email at that time, you would get a reply. And it's like, oh, actually, I didn't want to get into a conversation with you. I'm just sending this so I've sent it, sort of thing. But since setting up my business, one thing that I have learned, and I don't know how it took me so long to figure this out, but I can schedule emails to go out the next morning, which has been an absolute game changer for me. So if I do end up having to work on a night, which at the minute is quite infrequent, which is really nice, I can schedule it to be sent at, you know, 8 o'clock the next morning, and then it's like out of my head and into the ether, and it'll be delivered to that person at a more palatable time.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I totally identify with that. And I do the same thing. And I always know if I've had an email from you that's been scheduled, because it's that, because it defaults, doesn't it, to 8 o'clock on, we both use Gmail, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
So I know that when I've got ones from you, I'm like, she was scheduling.
Yeah, I was. I was. And I'm so pleased with myself for doing it, because there was a time where I just wouldn't, where I would reply. And then if that other person replied, I would reply. And then it would be like late at night. And then I'd just think, oh, what? We don't need to be having this conversation now, but I feel obligated to be responding. Yeah. So I think scheduling it just eliminates all of that, which is a dream.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And I always feel like a pro when I've seen that you've done it, or like I think you've done it, even if you haven't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, Lucy does that. I do that too.
I love that.
Getting something right.
Oh.
So this kind of actually segues me in to one of the questions that I have been asking every guest, and that is around what you do to like look after yourself. Call that self-care, looking after your well-being, whatever resonates for you. But what does it look like for you?
Oh, I mean, sometimes I think I'm utterly tragic at switching off. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but sometimes that's just how I am. And I sort of accept that that is part of my personality. But there's a couple of things that I do like to do. And at the minute, one of them is watering the garden on a night. So usually before Edie has her tea, we'll all go into the garden and she'll mess about and play, and I get to water the plants. And it just, there's something really relaxing about it. I mean, we would do it, like, you know, in the summer anyway. But last year, she was in a little tiny carrier while I did it. And now this year, she's running about the garden, which is just gorgeous. And so, yeah, I like to do that. And sometimes, if we don't have time, I do it when she's asleep, which is even nicer, if I'm really honest. Yeah. And, you know, pop a podcast on and I'm, you know, I'm away. So I like to do that. And I like to look after myself in the sense that I like to go get my hair cut regularly, and even things down to like making sure, because I wear glasses, so like making sure I've had eye tests done properly. And I think it's important, because especially now Edie likes to try and yank them off my face, so you know I want to make sure that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Because then I'm better to make sure that she's okay. So yeah, things like that. And then I just really like to watch Netflix. And so at the moment, my husband works from home and he works a night shift. So he works 8 p.m. till 2 a.m, which is, it is what it is, but it means that he works downstairs in our living room. Mm-hmm. So 3 nights a week, I'm kind of like relegated to like going to bed early, which on the face of it, at first I was like, I don't want to go to bed at 8 o'clock. But to be honest, it's been quite nice, because I can just go up and I can read, or I can watch some Netflix, or I can have a cup of tea, and I can just have that bit of time where it's just me. So yeah, I think that's my self-care.
I love that list. I love that list. I'm with you on all of it, I think. Especially watering the garden. I love
it. So nice. Yeah. So nice.
If you were to go back and talk to the Lucy that was becoming a parent a little bit earlier than she planned in December 2019, what piece of reassurance would you give yourself?
Gosh, I think I would just say that it's okay, and that it will be fine, and that the internet doesn't have all the answers. There's so many nights when I was like, my baby is doing this. Is this okay? And then end up on like, you know, Mumsnet forums, and just feel so utterly out of my depth. But, you know, that I think also it's probably boils down to like just trust your instincts a bit. Because she was early, we had to do like 3 hourly feeds, which was hardcore. So we was, you know, one of us would be on the night shift and one of us would be on the day, and you know, that kind of thing. And I think it was kind of eventually we were like, she's fine. We don't need to do this anymore. But because we hadn't done it before, we were like, I need to like ask somebody, you know, like, how do I, the hospital where, you know, like she needs feeds every 3 hours and you needed to like write it down on a list and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, a couple of weeks in, it was one, untenable really. And she was doing okay sleep wise as well. So I think it's that, like that moment of like, oh no, we have to do this now and we have to make the decisions. And, you know, we made the decision and it was the right one. But I think it was kind of tricky at first to kind of to trust that instinct. And whereas now, knowing what I know, it's like, oh, I should have just maybe relaxed into it a little bit more. But that's easier said than done when you haven't been a parent previously.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for hindsight, isn't there?
Yeah.
I'm going to be quoting you, and I've just written down when you said the internet doesn't have all the answers. That is, yeah, Lucy Critchley, 2021. Yeah.
Thank you.
100%. And then finally, what are your hopes for parents in the workplace kind of now and in the future?
I think it kind of boils down to what I was saying about, you know, working, being contracted 3 days, but working 4 or 5. I think it's that, like, I would hope that employers, especially now with everything that's gone on in the past year and a bit, that employers would be able to kind of see that and kind of appreciate when staff are going above and beyond outside of their working hours. And, you know, whether that's overtime pay or whether that's time in lieu or like just, I don't know, some kind of like appreciation, I think, for, you know, going above and beyond. Because I think ultimately setting up my own business has taught me that when I'm not working or when a client's not working, like, I'm not going to hear from them until they are working. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? But I think when you're on a contract somewhere or your staff somewhere, there's that expectation, I feel, that you will just respond or you will do that job because that is, you know, you have to. And I think there's just that, like, I don't know, almost like a fear of like, well, if I don't do it, then so-and-so's going to be annoyed at me or blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like, if you're not working, then you're not working, aren't you? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't quite know what I'm trying to say, but something along those lines of, like, I think respect as well around people's working times and boundaries again. And just kind of when you do it that extra time or you do that thing that you are doing on your day off, then, you know, that it's in some way recognized.
I think I know what you're saying, and it comes down to sometimes that we just kind of get taken for granted, that that going the extra mile is just assumed. And corporates talk about discretionary effort all the time, don't they? And but that runs out at a point, and for somebody to continue with that discretionary effort, it has to be two-way.
Yeah.
And I mean, what that two-way looks like is different for everybody, but it's knowing the value that people are adding to your business, isn't it? And being appreciated for that.
Yeah, exactly. I just, you know, there are things that obviously happen on the days that you aren't working, for example, but even the fact that you potentially are expected to involve yourself in that, I think should be valued and respected. But it is tricky, and I don't know if there is that magical one word answer or you know, but I think it's quite one of that sort of thing is a reason that people leave industries, isn't it? Because they can't do that when they've got kids at home and they've got other priorities, or even not kids, but they have to use that other time to be doing something else. And I just think that needs to be valued when it does happen.
Definitely. Total supporter of that. Thank you so much for joining me. It has been brilliant. And I hope that everybody listening has got a bit more insight into who Lucy Critchley is. She absolutely is the VA extraordinaire with her incredible specialism in podcasts. So if people want to come and find out more about you and your business, where do we find you?
The best place would be to look at my website, which is lucycritchley-va.com, or I'm on Instagram, it's lucycritchley.va.
Well, and I know from a very good source that this will be in the show notes as well, so people can actually go and have a click on those links, can't they?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I'm so pleased to be closing season one of Power of the Parent, the podcast, with my very own Lucy Critchley. I mean, I know you're not mine, but I like, you know, I know I've got to share you, but you know what I mean? It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for getting this all started, because I, like I've said several times now, I really was faffing with it and figuring out what I wanted to do and what it was going to be about. And the level of simplicity and process that you've put behind it was exactly what I needed. And you are one of the most patient people I've ever met.
Thank you. That's so nice. Oh, well, I'm just glad that you asked me to help.
Well, thank you. And over and out until season two. Thank you, everybody that has listened and sent just gorgeous messages of support. Now you know how we make it all happen. Thanks very much for tuning in to Power of the Parent, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate, review and subscribe. And if you could tell all your friends about the podcast, that would be wonderful. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find me on Instagram. Just search Power of the Parent. See you next time.